und Fisch, 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 Fisch.
I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and
well, howdy doody, boys and girls, moms and dads, and children of all ages. How's everybody out there in the wide world of radio land? Well, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and of course, RJ in the control center. And, you know, yes, of course, I'm Fish and Frank, but, you know, last week I wanted to be Vacay Frank. I wanted to go on vacation.
Where'd you go?
Where I went, let's see. Well, it's July, and when you live in South Florida, that means not a lot of traffic, you know, very few people, and you don't really think that if you go to the panhandle, there's 800 million people, traffic jams that are 5 and 6 and 8 miles long, and that can take you 2 to 3 hours to go a mile. You have no idea all this is, you know, you forget, right?
No idea.
So, you know, we go out, travel around, and I got to tell you, one of the things in the world, ever since I was young, I just like to drive. And when I was young, I spent a few years actually hitchhiking around. I've literally hitchhiked back and forth cross country a few times. And the people you met, the places you got to see, I mean, I walked through a lot of towns because local cop get angry if you're hitchhiking in their town. So you know, they give you a ride to the other end of town sometimes. Sometimes they just tell you, don't let me catch you. And but as I got older, more, you know, actually I had money enough to afford gas, I guess was the big turning point in all that.
Yeah, that was for me, too.
Was that for you?
Yeah, when I finally had a job and I can afford gas, yeah.
Yeah, it was affording the gas to be able to go cruising.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm from that ancient age when, you know, I'm very lucky. I don't understand why people are in such a hurry all the time. They get in their car and they're running to go to work. They're running to go home. They must hate their cars. Buy a different one. Now, I got a 2007 Toyota. Actually loved this truck. Sat in it, didn't really care for it, thought, you know. And I drove it for about 20 minutes, absolutely fell in love with it. I sit in that thing, I am so contented. It's just a wonderful place to be. And then get on some back roads. And I don't mean like, you know, a small highway. I mean on a dirt road or a lane and a half blacktop road. Just go cruising and look. See what's there, you know. We were coming back from ICAST. Well, we were coming back from ICAST, and it was me and Carl in one truck, and Robert and Christina in another truck, in their car, and big traffic jam ahead. So first thing I do is hook a right. I get off the interstate, and Robert says to Christina, "Just follow Frank. He always finds the cool way to go home."
Very scenic.
Yeah, just start driving through. We got to see a reservoir, a bunch of old barns, a little half-closed downtown, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. But I get up to the panhandle and find out. And this is, beep, 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 public announcement, pickup truck people. My pickup truck, I absolutely love it. I want to travel in it. Very dangerous right now. Because the crooks have figured out people in pickup truck have way cooler toys, way better stuff than people in cars.
Yeah.
And so there's like for every car broken into, 20 pickup trucks get the window smashed out and rummaged through overnight. And it's going on in the panhandle. If you're up by Pensacola up there, they got some beautiful areas, but around that interstate and that area, no, it's not good. And I'm not going to say the name of the La Hotel we were at, but oh my God. But pickup trucks tend to carry guns, other armament, cool tools, money, you know, stuff like that. So they're really breaking into the pickup trucks. So my vacation consisted of, you know, having a really cool first day and then getting my window smashed out, then spending the next entire day in traffic jams. And so I left. I can't say I'm more stressed out or less stressed out. I'm pretty sure I'm the same, but I was to the point that I just told Robert, I'm leaving for a while. I've got to get out of here. So does that mean I'm just still messed up?
Yeah, probably.
Still messed up. Okay, yeah. Anyway, to the fishing.
Are we voting on that? I just raised my hand.
Okay, so I'm still a raving lunatic. Everything in the world still. You ever get to that point in life where everything is going right? I'm involved with a new company. I'm an amazing partner. And my Fish and Franks, considering what's going on. And that's a great segment. Considering what's going on, we're doing very well.
Yeah.
But there's issues. Definitely. Shrimp. Oh, my God. Now, I think right before you came to work, about a year or two before, so it'd be 22 years ago or something like that,
right.
We spent 7 weeks with no shrimp. 7 weeks, the longest we ever went. I think it was 7 weeks. Couldn't get a shrimp, live or dead. They just weren't there.
Right.
No shrimp. And right now, we're going through one day where we've got gorgeous, beautiful live shrimp and some frozen, and then the next day we've got nothing.
Right. Yeah. It's
any ideas?
Honestly, I don't know, because in the time that I've been there, I think the longest we went without frozen shrimp and live shrimp was probably about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks tops.
But so this is like
usually,
nothing new.
We,
if you go to the bait
have
shop,
live shrimp, but this is the longest we've gone without frozen shrimp.
So if you go to a bait shop and they don't have shrimp, it's hard to get mad at them, because whether it's wherever you're at on the west coast of Florida, actually anywhere in South Florida, all the bait's wild caught.
Yeah.
It's not farm raised bait. They can't order what they want.
There's not a machine that pumps these
out. So if the shrimp aren't there to catch, they're just not there to catch.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I think it could be a cycle with the shrimp. I think it could be some ill planning. I don't know. Mother Nature's been a real weird one this whole year.
Now, what sort of nefarious plans and evil intent? What is the plan you thought the shrimp had?
I don't know. But I'm talking about planning on the frozen, the frozen distributors' parts.
Oh, on the people who supply us with.
Yeah, just not quite preparing for.
I couldn't figure out what kind of. Okay, the shrimp had a plan and it didn't work out. I mean, I'm pretty sure the shrimp's plan didn't work out when they got scooped up in the net. I figure their plan went bad right there.
No, because and we run into this issue regularly with a lot of different frozen baits, and we get spoiled. Because shrimp are always so consistent, but we went, 6 months without squid wings this year. And
yeah.
We finally just started getting them in because they found a different area where they're actually finding them, because come to find out, not only was it the Orient paying more money for them for food, but they thought it was a never-ending
supply,
and they over-harvested the Sea of Cortez of all these humble squid. Just destroyed it. I mean, they've taken the population down to almost zero in that area. Just overfishing. It's Earth first, we'll log all the other planets later kind of thing. They don't have any foresight in it. And then you've got politics sometimes plays into it, too. Like,
what do you mean, politics?
Like with us with sardines for quite some time, because they were coming out of Venezuela, and then they had to find a roundabout way to get
we're not,
imported.
The U.S. is not allowed to buy from Venezuela. The best Spanish sardines for bait come from Venezuela, but because of the whole socialism movement over there, where the socialists have literally destroyed the countries, their people who had money are now in poverty. People have no food, no toys, no nothing, and socialism destroyed it. But with that political climate, the U.S. Put on an embargo. We're not allowed to buy anything from them, so they have to send them to Nicaragua, where in Nicaragua, they're repackaged as a product of Nicaragua and then shipped here to the U.S.
Right.
So, and it's surprising they're still inexpensive.
Yeah, exactly.
You would think after catching them, getting in a fish house in one country, shipping them to another country, repackaging, redoing it, and then shipping it onto here, that would be a lot more expensive. But
so people just don't realize how crazy it can get to get any type of frozen bait. And shrimp is another one that's just going to be falling into that category sometimes, unfortunately, and it makes it kind of tough.
But it's nothing new. We've been going through it on and off for years.
No, not at all.
Okay, so a lot of red tide out there. Shrimp's really hard to find. Now, are they dying in the red tide? Is the red tide causing us not to have shrimp?
No, definitely not. I mean, the
absolutely, definitely.
I'm going to go with 98% pretty okay. definite. How's that?
I'm just messing with you, Robert.
I know, but I never like to be 100% unless I actually see it, witness it for myself. But, you know, shrimp and crabs are not affected by red tide. All of your other fish that have gills, you know, basically your, any of your species that have gills or breathe the air right in the immediate red tide, the red tide has a... basically a paralyzing effect on the gills, which suffocates the fish, but it also has a paralyzing effect on your lung system. And so mammals like dolphins, sea turtles, manatees that are right there involved in it, right at water level where it becomes a little bit of an aerosol, get affected by it. But the crabs and shrimp, they're no problem. It just happens to correlate with the summertime normal peewee season. In addition to, we're in our second full moon now of peewee season starting, so it's making shrimp even more difficult, because always on a full moon shrimp get a little sketchy, you know, because they
molt. They're shedding too, yeah. Molting, right?
Yeah,
where the entire outer body of a shrimp literally just falls off.
Yep.
And if you've ever pictured a soft shell crab, picture that on a shrimp, where literally the shell of a crab or a shrimp opens up and the animal literally comes out of it. They get a little bit bigger, then they takes them a day or two to get hard again, and once that happens, on they go with their life. But they spend several days each month or every few months just soft and mushy with no hard outer shell. That's why if you put a hook in a shrimp, they don't feel it. They don't like it, but they really wouldn't like it if you kissed them either. Kissing a shrimp and putting a hook into them have the same effect. Both of them, you get them upset. But when you lose your whole outer body every month, it's impossible to grow new nerve endings every month.
Right.
You couldn't regenerate new nerve endings once a month on that whole bit, because the old ones have just fallen off.
Right.
So they use the hard outer shell for protection, but at the same time, they've got to lay there completely vulnerable, pretty much unable to move for at least a couple hours,
yeah,
while they shed that.
Hours. Absolutely.
I mean, I can't even imagine it. It'd be like, I don't know, tied up naked in a big room covered in peanut butter with a group of, you know, I don't know, bulldogs. It'd be horrible.
Been there, done that.
You've been there, done that one, huh? Okay.
Oh, nice.
I can see that. I actually can. I can see it going.
Probably an easy way to describe what you're talking about, the process.
Really? You can describe being naked in a room covered in peanut butter?
No.
Surrounded by bulldogs?
Nope. Not at all.
This I gotta hear.
Nope.
Come on.
No. Not even gonna go to that one.
I'm really RJ, I figured it from, but you, Robert?
Yeah.
What? The things we learn on radio.
The things you gotta try to visualize on radio that you don't want to.
Picture that in your mind. Poke you cannot unsee that.
No, poke your mind's eye out. That's horrible. Everyone has watched, like, some type of nature show, especially, like, people... I mean, it's hard to not pass up watching, like, a butterfly go from a caterpillar into its pupa into the actual butterfly. When you see it crawl out of its cocoon and you watch its wings unfold and slowly get the blood flowing to it and makes the wings hard where they can actually fly, that's basically the similar technique of the exoskeleton of your shrimp.
God, I'm a horrible person. Okay, go ahead, Robert.
So
keep describing, buddy.
That's the easiest way to describe the shrimp. They have that soft exoskeleton, extremely vulnerable, and it takes hours for that process to happen. And what will happen is those shrimp actually hide under the mud naturally in the wild to escape predators. They're a nocturnal animal, so they come out at night, but when they go through that molting process, they'll actually hide in the mud a little bit and
protect themselves.
So they're
themselves. Chicken.
Yeah.
They're completely vulnerable. They're not exposing themselves.
I don't think it's chicken. Okay. That's just self-preservation.
I get it. I tell you, I'd be hiding in the mud too.
Yeah.
All right. So shrimp don't die from red tide, but we can actually, on years where we have the red tide, expect a better shrimp harvest.
Yeah, later in the season, absolutely.
Because more blue crabs, more shrimp, and larger sizes, because they're actually feeding on the stuff dying from the red tide.
Yes, yeah. All those fish don't go to waste, you know. As they decompose or as the red tide moves out, other predators eat them. And shrimp and crabs are a predator. They just happen to be a small predator. And right. they're also opportunistic. They're going to take advantage of all that death that's out there. And it's just like a, it's kind of like you have a lot of rain, you'll have an incredible harvest of crops. And it's the same thing. If you have a lot of food around, your animals tend to have healthier and more offspring. And that coincides with shrimp doing the same thing when you have these catastrophic supposed events of what red tide right. does.
And now, I would think there's less predators for a period of time.
Absolutely. Right?
So there's less things eating the shrimp, so they got more chance to breed and get bigger.
Yep. See, I knew there was a reason we kept you around.
It was the peanut butter, I thought.
But so less predation, a lot more food leads to much better shrimp egg production, bigger shrimp faster, producing more eggs, all that. So theoretically, over the next few months to a year, we're going to see a lot more shrimp, a lot more blue crabs, a lot more crustaceans of most sorts.
Absolutely.
So the whole red tide thing. Now, I've talked to a whole bunch of scientists, and one in particular who I respect the most, and there is, if you live in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, you're 99.98% unaffected by the Coosatchie River. If you live from, you know, Boca Grande Pass north, Little Gasparilla Island, what's that other one, Don Pedro or something up
yeah,
there?
Don
Venice. You are 100% unaffected by the Coosatchie River.
Correct.
It is physically, virtually, as Robert would say, I can't say impossible, but you have a better chance of seeing a spaceship land on 41 than the Coosatchie affecting something north of Boca Grande Pass. Pretty much impossible. I don't care how much the wind is blowing out of the south or whatever else. That current coming from the north is very strong.
Yeah.
But any local source can produce red tides. And the three biggest ones, and one that shocked me that I had no idea of, fertilizer is number one.
Right.
Right? Nitrates and nitrites. But fertilizer, people going out, and if you see somebody standing there, you know, and looking on their back door into their canal or along the ICW or along the beach, and they get a beautiful green lawn, chances are that's what kicked off the red tide.
They're definitely part of the problem.
They're definitely part of the problem. All right. That fertilizer they put on their lawn to make that grass green all year long is, that's a biggie. The next one that people don't realize is human waste. The stuff that comes out of our septic tanks. Well, not necessarily toxic, but it is a fertilizer.
Yeah.
I mean, years ago, you know, anything that went over where the outhouse used to be was, you know, it pretty much grew good. Human waste will kill stuff in its raw form, but after it's been through the septic tank, it's actually pretty good fertilizer, nitrates. Or
right.
Nitrates.
Well, and the easiest way to describe that is you in the summertime when you, or in the wintertime when you're here and it's the dry season, you can tell people have a septic tank because it's the one and only square green piece of grass or weed system in their entire yard. It's
right.
growing right above their septic tank.
It's the extra water from flushing and taking showers.
And the dissolved organics are creating nutrients right there mm-hmm. to feed all that.
So, septic tanks. Number one, I would say fertilizer. Number two, septic tanks. Nitrates, nitrites, all that kind of stuff, fertilizers. The one I didn't expect, really the one I didn't expect, is when you have a red tide and the fish die, and that can actually produce another red tide, more of a red tide, because it's literally feeding on the dead fish.
Yeah, yeah. It can increase the bloom, make the bloom stronger, help spread the bloom, because the wind will drive those decaying fish everywhere else. You know, everyone thinks, oh, I saw dead fish, there's red tide here. No, there's not. That could have been 3 miles down the way. But because of those dying dead fish going up, decaying in an area, can help make a new bloom in that area.
It shocked me because I'm thinking, how could dead fish, you know, actually support the red tide thing? Now, here's what kind of justified it in my head was that how many times, you know, RJ, you would remember this, young people wouldn't have any idea. But when people would catch small fish they didn't really want, they would put them in their garden. I mean, putting fish in gardens, whether it's flower gardens or vegetable gardens, dead fish, putting them in there, that was considered excellent fertilizer.
Absolutely. You know, and that was the natural fertilizer because even, you know, 30 years ago, there really wasn't that many artificial fertilizers around. You know,
no, there was. Yeah.
Not to the mass that there is today.
Well, there's nothing. 30 years ago, there was not. Everything now is artificial. Yeah. 30 years ago, only part of the stuff was, but right. Everything now is artificial.
Yeah, so if that was like the ultimate best fertilizer there ever was to put in your gardens was fish.
Yeah, plant dead fish, minnows, whatever, around your, you know, flower garden, vegetable garden. So that kind of clicked it, made it, when I was talking to Betty Stogler about it,
she's our local Sea Grant agent for Charlotte County.
Sea Grant is an amazing organization, but they have a bright, shining star in Betty Stogler.
Yes.
Betty is one of the most brilliant people on the planet, and she's not biased. Betty does not do agenda science. She goes out, says, okay, well, this and this, and then she'll listen to arguments and go, okay, well, that might be possible, we'd do this and whatever. I've never seen her do agenda anything, which leaves her as really, there's only like three scientists in the state. I will believe anything they say because most of them are agenda driven, trying to get more money.
Absolutely.
They're going to say whatever it takes to get another grant and get another donation, whatever it is. If the sky is falling, then that's what it takes to get another donation. Well, you could have 9 inches of concrete over you, and that's falling because they need another donation. Right. Betty doesn't do that.
No.
But she was when she told me fish, the dying fish, were a big part of Red Tide, I was, in just blew my mind. I don't know why. Never considered it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have considered it either until, again, you talked about putting fish in the garden.
Yeah, that's where it kind of came through in my head. All of a sudden, I'm picturing, you know, because my dad did it when back in the 60s when I was growing up. He's taking all these fish and putting them in the garden in front of the house. I'm like, what the heck? You know, I mean, it was just weird seeing my dad put fish in the garden, kind of stuck in my head. Fertilizer. So anyway, Red Tide can be caused by just any runoff from any creek, any canal. Now, about 60% of the water that comes out of the Coosatchee River comes right from the Fort Myers-Cape Coral watershed.
Correct.
So there's about 40% of the water coming out of the Coosatchee when it hits the mouth there that comes down from Okeechobee and about 60% from local water sources.
Yeah,
at
all
this
the watershed.
Point.
People don't look at it. You know, they're trying to point their finger at one giant thing because the river comes out of Okeechobee. Well, that's the giant eyesore, but when you actually look at it, there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of miles of canal systems throughout Lee County that all feed into the Coosatchee. But now take away the canals without being the obvious point. Every one of your ditches, swales, everything.
All the roadways. Every ditch.
All that.
Dump into
slides Coosatchee. Right in there. And plus your rainfall that just actually runs right across your lawn and slowly saturates into the ground right there, comes out into some other water system.
So
whether it's a ditch that's a mile away from your house, it's still feeding that canal system and the whole river.
All right, but now I guess the point we're trying to make is there's been a lot of things come down, and everybody's screaming about Coosatchee, Red Tide, water conditions and all this. My point and my thing is Okeechobee's not to blame specifically because right now there's parts of Okeechobee where they have a lot of grass, a lot of stuff that's critical for bass fishing, you know, and habitat and all that. And there's a lot of fish there. And the fishing's very good. And you can go to, you know, pretty much most of Okeechobee and have amazing fishing experiences. Right now, you can go there. You're going to catch bass. You're going to have a great time. So we know the water in at least part of Okeechobee is not toxic. And I would say that's because of the grass.
You know, all the different types of grass, because you all actually have steps. You know, it's kind of like people landscape their yard where they start off with taller hedges up close to the house and then it fades down to smaller hedges coming out away from the house, so you can kind of have that step process to look at it. Well, you look at a lake, a healthy lake, it has larger plants going down to different stages of different plants. All those have a different filtration system in the biology of things that filter out different products. And that's what you have with Okeechobee. You've got your buggy whips, your cattails, your water hyacinth. Then you've got some of your submerged grasses like hydrilla, stuff like that. Whether it's native or not, every one of those are filtering out different organisms in the water that make that whole habitat healthier.
Well, where this brings it into fact is there is a portion of Okeechobee that is bad, and it's some of those bigger open water areas. And from what I was talking to Betty about it, and everybody's been, you know, oh, Coolidge this, and Okeechobee, they're it's poisoning the world. And I'm like, okay, they started running the water from Okeechobee down to Coolidge in 1939. In 1939, that's when they started flowing water. So what changed? What happened? Was there a catalyst? Was there a catastrophe? What went on? And Betty was telling me about a couple major weather events. We had a very wet winter, and in 16.
Right.
The Peace River went up to 14 feet in January, which is unheard of. It should be about a foot and a half, and it was at 14 feet. Very wet winter, then exceptionally dry spring and summer. And what that did was all that stuff with that wet winter put a lot of stuff into Lake Okeechobee, the Kissimmee River, the Coolidge. But it's more important about Lake Okeechobee than the Kissimmee, because Kissimmee dumps into Okeechobee.
Sure.
So that got all in there, and then it got real calm, very mild winds, very little rain, if any. And all that kind of settles to the bottom. And then you have Irma comes through, stirs it all up. And the biggest change, and what she said, and I believe Betty on this one, because it's the only thing that makes sense.
Makes real good sense.
Is almost 2 years ago, when they did the construction, or started doing the construction on the dam slash dike around Okeechobee. So when they did the construction, they changed the discharge patterns.
Times, basically.
Yeah, they're not discharging the water in pulses anymore. They've had to keep it flowing. That's what changed. The construction on the dam slash dike, and the reason in 1939 they started discharging the water, because I don't remember the year, but it was in the teens, there was at least 1,600 plus people died in a hurricane. The water from Lake Okeechobee came flooding south. The Everglades were flooded. They don't know, but I think they know of like 1,600 people died, and they think a few thousand more, which would have been migrant workers, Indians, stuff like that, that weren't actually accounted for in town. That people just didn't know they were there,
right,
and got washed away by the hurricane, died. Mm-hmm. So anywhere from 1,600 to 3,000 people died. So the whole country went up in arms. Oh my God, all these people are dead. Build a dike around it. Let's fix this. Let's drain the Everglades. And that's what started all this. A bad reaction to a horrific incident. And that's what we don't want people to do now, is run around saying, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do the next thing. We need a few people like Betty Stogler who literally go through research, check it out, and are not doing something just to appease a bunch of crazy people. That's what got us into this in the first place.
Right.
A knee-jerk reaction to a catastrophic event. Well, we're getting some really bad events. I'm not going to call it catastrophic at this point, but I'm going to call them really, really damn bad. Now, if we can get some reasonable people together, not agenda-driven, okay, we're going to do this just so I can get reelected, and there's not one politician I can think of in Florida right now who's I've been in contact that's doing anything but trying to get reelected. So whatever the politicians say, look for another answer, because I've talked to several. the big thing is we got to be careful in what we do, or we're just going to mess up our kids and grandkids. Therein lies the big thing. We got a bad problem now, but let's make sure we don't make it worse. Let's make sure we make it better.
Absolutely.
So anyway, into the fun part of the fishing show. Ah, back into fun. It was fun to get all that out because
people need to be educated about it. People just go by the generic 2-second clip on the nightly news or the 2-sentence garbage written on Facebook, whatever, and all of a sudden they think it's truth. And, you know, they need to stop and actually
learn,
look into it, investigate it a little bit more, and be a little more educated on it.
But to tell you the quite honest truth, I enjoy talking about it, but I'm really bored with it at this point. Okay, going on to the next thing. Shark fishing. Is there any shark fishing around?
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, the upper harbor isn't kicking as great as it should be, but I don't know if that's because of the wind that we've been having, that not too many people have been fishing up in the upper end. But down in Matt Lachey, Two Pines area, hearing a few more reports, and mostly that's because that's a little bit protected by the wind, I think is why I'm getting some of those better reports on that.
That wind's west-southwest.
Yeah, and that's going to at least be protected a little bit by Pine Island. You know, so they're catching some black tips, some bonnet heads. A couple of good-sized lemon sharks have been being caught around there. There's still been some black nose and Atlantic sharp nose. They're doing fairly good on it. You know, it's not too bad at all.
All right. Now, is tarpon still a thing? We talked about sharks. What about tarpon?
Tarpon have been doing pretty good. Up until this wind, they were doing really good, and it's mostly because of the majority of the tarpon that were being seen and caught were just on the outside of the west wall. And right at the mouths of the 20-foot holes. The problem with it is that the wind has been coming right out of the southwest, so it's been tough.
All right, Robert. Da-da-da-da-da. We have a live report update here. Carl, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir.
Is that workable there? Trying to. All
right. I got him.
Okay. RJ's got you. I've been boring people to death with my rhetoric here, so I got to get somebody live and exciting. You are on the water right now, are you not, Captain Carl?
Yeah, we're out here battling this wind today.
All right. What's going on out there in the harbor? How is it?
It's, you know, the fishing was slow this morning. I think it has a lot to do with the full moon that's going on right now. But the bite is actually starting to pick up now. You know, we started getting into some redfish.
Now, are these your normal Captain Carl oversized redfish, or are these actually slot fish?
No, these are all slot ones.
All right, well, that's something new for you. Last few times, all you've been able to catch is 30 inchers, so you're actually down in the legal slot fish.
Yeah, we tried to go find them today, but we couldn't pull out an oversized there. We could only pull out keepers.
All right.
Which isn't bad.
No, that's okay, Carl. You're allowed to have normal sized fish every once in a while.
There you go. Fish on.
What do you got?
There you go, ma'am. Fish him. Yeah, you got a redfish. There you go. Get him. Yeah, she's got a redfish on right now.
Okay.
That's a good one, ma'am.
What are you using for bait?
Nope, that's a good redfish. You're doing fine. We're using Rockport Rattler jig heads with cut crab.
All right. How's your customer doing?
Oh, she's got him. I'm just trying to net him. Yeah, get in the net. All right. That's a good one there.
That's awesome, Carl. One quick question. We'll let you go back to your customers.
Yep.
What's going on with the snook out there? Anything?
We haven't caught a snook today yet. Yesterday, we got a 42-inch snook yesterday.
Okay, so snook fishing still not too bad.
No, we're just not fishing for them. We're using crabs. We're trying to go for mainly just redfish.
Robert, any questions for Carl?
I thought you caught that snook yesterday on a crab.
Yeah, we were actually fishing for redfish yesterday too, and that was actually the first fish of the day was a 42-inch snook on a half a crab.
All right, any idea how big the redfish was that just came in?
Oops, I just dropped him. He is...
Dumb.
Stop it. He's 6.5 pounds. He's about 24.
Look at the teeth marks.
Oh, yeah. Somebody tried to eat him.
So,
there you go, man.
What's the name of the woman who just caught it?
Man, what's your name? Jane.
Well, tell her we said congratulations.
Frank says congratulations.
Any questions, RJ? All right. Well, you guys have fun.
Yes, sir. Yeah, but fishing is actually now starting to pick up pretty good. Now at the full, they're starting to get hungry off that full moon.
All right, Carl. Well, we appreciate the report out there. Any best bet for the day?
I mean, if you're going to be fishing, fish slow because the water, I'm marking, I'm marking 88.6 degrees of water right now. So,
well, that's actually down a little bit.
Yeah, it is actually a lot cooler from the past couple of days because we have been getting 90 degree wet water. But I'm still fishing very, very slow for all the fish.
Oh, yeah. Once you're over 85, slow down, slow down, slow down.
Yes, that's going to make a world of a difference on catching fish.
All right. Any last question, Robert?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
All right, Carl. We'll see you later, buddy. Captain Carl,
yes,
KB Backcountry. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So, anyway, he's catching redfish out there.
Now, Carl had a point there that's kind of subtle, but, you know, we're on a full moon right now. And as tough as this is to say, we usually tell people this time of year to fish as early as possible because of how hot it is and afternoon thunderstorms.
Okay. I get, I know where you're going to go. But what I really want to know is, what's up with the full moon? Are they dancing at night? I mean, are they having, what, why is it that a full moon is affecting the fishing? What is it about a full moon? Do they have little ritual ceremonies? Are they burning, like, shrimp and effigy or something
out
there?
No, they usually sacrifice fishermen.
Oh, they sacrifice. Okay. Thanks, Robert. Okay.
I know when I'm not going fishing.
Well, the full moon lights up the sky at night. And if you have a cloudless night like we've had the last two nights, those fish can feed all night long and feed on all these nocturnal animals a lot easier, like your shrimp and your crabs are primarily nocturnal. They come out, the fish can see them easier, so they gorge all night long. Come sunrise, they're pretty much ready to kick back and take a nap. So by mid-afternoon into the evening, those fish are finally starting to get hungry again, and that's why you'll notice the afternoon bite and evening bite is much better than the early morning during clear nights with a full moon.
So it's basically the amount of light. They
Absolutely.
Can actually see their prey. It's easier to hunt, and a lot more stuff moves at night. Once it gets daytime out, starts getting light out, things want to hide because they can be seen.
Right.
So it makes them more likely to die.
Right.
So they want to go out at night when they're less likely to die.
Plus it's a degree or two cooler, water temperature-wise, which we know that 1 or 2 degrees makes a huge difference with anything when it comes to a cold-blooded animal that's out there trying to survive. So they might be just a hair more active, too, during those times.
All right. Now, blue crabs are not affected by red tide.
Nope.
So they don't die in the red tide. We're going to see possibly better numbers of those over the next few months because in the blue crab, the more you feed it, the faster it grows.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like if it can grow twice, it's like say normal rate with a lot of extra food.
Yeah, well, and they eat a lot. You know, that's why nobody has ever farmed blue crabs. They farm shrimp, they farm crawdads, but blue crab, look up any research on blue crab farming. Nobody's been able to do it successfully because of the amount of food that they are required to maintain before they become cannibalistic and start eating each other. It's astonishing.
So they're basically a mouth with a behind attached to it.
Pretty much.
Not much in between.
No.
Goes in one end, goes out the other end.
Yeah, they're almost like a goldfish where they'll pretty much eat themselves to death. But they're just constantly wanting to feed. They don't always have the opportunity. It's not like they're out there gorging themselves in the wild. But
in the wild, they don't have other blue crabs to easily eat.
Right.
In
yeah.
a farm situation, if they don't have whatever food they want. It's like when I tell people to go put blue crabs, I say, put the bait in the top part where the crabs are going to be. Don't bother putting it in that little trap door there, because if you forget to go out there for a day or two and, you know, bait them up or get them out of the trap, you might have had six crabs in there, and you're going to have one big, fat, mean one left.
Right.
Because he ate the rest of them.
Absolutely.
So I bait it in the door or in the area where the crabs are going to be trapped at, so they can eat on that instead of each other.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, ever watch the movie Predator when Arnold Schwarzenegger and it takes the helmet off, and that's a blue crab face.
Yeah.
It's exactly a blue crab. That's where they got the face of that alien Predator guy from.
Yeah.
That's absolutely blue crab. If you're using blue crabs for bait, what size do you want?
Honestly, I'm not going to be too picky with it, because if you get too big of a crab, you can cut it in half or into quarters, you know, and if you get too small, you know, a tiny crab, I'm just going to break the point off just to let a little bit of scent into the water.
Now, some of the guys are taking, and they hold the legs on one side between their thumb and their index finger, grab the shell, and literally move their hands apart, literally tearing the top shell off. And then they put the hook into it. Now remember, the blue crab is going to die from this, but tearing a shell in half, he doesn't have nerve endings there. That shell is going to fall off once a month anyway. It's literally coming apart where he would molt it off.
Yeah.
So when you take that shell off, it does get you a little queasy. No, no doubt, boys and girls. Okay, got it. But yeah, I know. I'm picturing my head because I've done this 1,000 times and I've cut them in half, cut them in quarters. But if it's little, you have two choices. If you snap the end off the one, it's okay for them to be hard, right? Just get the hook in them?
Absolutely. You know, the fish feed on them no matter what. It's not, they even have claws in the wild where they can fight back. But, you know, the ones you purchase from bait shops, the claws are at least removed so you can handle them. It's not for the fish. It's actually for you to be able to handle them and put them on a hook.
Yeah, because I tell you what, blue crabs are mean. They will back up. Just you, you blue crab bait guy, RJ?
Oh yeah. I'm fortunately I still have.
Because you were cringing as
I still have 10 fingers.
My description was bad, you know. But you actually into it too.
Oh yeah.
You know, the
what do you use blue crabs for?
Striped bass.
Ah, the up nor'easter.
That's right. We'd go out in the canoe on the flats. And you look for the crabs, and you'd scoop them up with a net, you know, a long-handled net. And then you would find some way of getting the claws off and still keep your fingers. And they made great striped bass bait.
All right.
And also, we used to catch called a blackfish. And I forget what the scientific...
Tautog,
right?
Yeah.
And they loved blue crabs. I mean, if you wanted to catch a big, big blackfish, you use blue crab.
Now, is that one good to eat?
Oh yeah, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, really good eating, and they're a fat chunky fish, so you get a lot.
Totally different than a sheep's head, but they have the exact same fishing techniques as sheep's head, the exact same bait thieving abilities as a sheep's head, and taste probably a little bit better than sheep's head.
Now, do they have the teeth?
They have the molars too.
Yeah, they got
like
the teeth.
Head.
Okay, because
I just don't know if they're in the porgy family or not. The way sheep's head is, I don't think they are, but I'm not 100% on that one, but. Usually it's the easiest way to describe for anyone from who's up in the Northeast that comes down here to fish. If they're looking to catch sheep's head, just tell them they're fishing for tog, and they'll have a better idea on it.
Okay. So blackfish or tog.
Mm-hmm.
All right. These guys got to school me every once in a while. School I went to, you had to walk uphill both ways.
Now, if you go out and catch your own blue crabs like you were talking about, the best way... to take the claws off, it's the only way to take the claws off of a crab and still have him live, is you actually take a pair of pliers and crush his claw.
Well, you crush the arm, not the claw.
Well, right below the claw itself, but not...
All right, because I usually... Where the big claw part is, the round claw part, then you have kind of like arms that hold the claws.
Yeah.
And you want to crush part of that arm.
Right.
And
they'll actually release their entire claw off their body the way a lizard releases its tail. And it will not harm that crab. But if you take that claw or right below the arm and try to twist it off or yank and pull it off, that will kill the crab. the crab actually has the ability to just close off all of its basically vitals to that thing and just drop and release that claw itself.
Right. Well, it makes sense if you think about it, because the if you live on the bottom amongst the rocks and everything, if you got that claw trapped in something, he would just sit there and die. If they can just release it, or even if a fish grabs him by a leg or a arm, they can just let it go and maybe escape the predator or get free from an entrapment.
Right. Mostly from getting attacked by predators. They use that for their defense mechanism to protect themselves in both ways. They're either going to pinch the snot out of you, or if you grab a hold of it and they can't get let go of them, they'll release that arm so they can swim away and escape. Mm-hmm.
All right, now I had something there I was going to ask you. It's probably better I don't remember. But it was right at
the way we're going with some of these, probably so.
That's right, yeah.
I had something right there, right on the tip of my head, I was going to say. And okay.
Did it have anything to do with peanut butter?
No. I was Cocker Spaniels and something, but I couldn't remember. All right. Shrimp shortage. Live and frozen. Hope that it gets done. Full moon we went over. With the smaller blue crabs, almost everything eats them.
Absolutely.
And so they're actually a pretty darn good bait for almost anything.
I mean, if they're a tiny blue crab, I mean, let's say 2 inches from point to point. Mangrove snapper will eat them very easily.
Sheephead love them.
Sheephead will love them.
Okay.
Offshore, permit, grouper, your grunts, your porgies, all your different snappers, they'll absolutely eat blue crab. But inside, you know, use them for this. Snook will eat them as...
Black drum is probably one of the best things for black drum.
Black drum and redfish this time of year, that's by far probably the number one best bait there is out there. Yeah.
And as you heard, folks, you know, that wasn't stage, it wasn't recording. That was actually Carl in the water catching redfish. So, a lot of things going on in the harbor, a little more than what I would suspect. But right now, again, we're back to that scenario with that red tide kind of middle section all messed up. We know the red tide's been around Little Gasparilla Pass, Boca Raton Pass. It's going into Whidden Bay, where Bull Bay. It's pushing all the way back up to Cape Hayes. Now, the big thing is to remember, if you were in Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, Northport on the Myakka River, you're not going to get red tide. It's not coming up past Cape Hayes right now because of the height of the Peace and Myakka rivers. As long as that river is at 5 feet or more, if you go on fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, go to the Peace River button. If you look on the height there, where that meter is in Arcadia, if it's 5 feet or more, the red tide is not going to come up the harbor. Too much fresh water. It cannot live in that. Even if it does come in, if we got a southwest wind, a long incoming tide, the minute that tide turns, all that red tide is dead.
Absolutely.
It won't live in fresh water. The one thing we know about that kills red tide is fresh water.
Right. And that being said, you know, we were talking to the customer yesterday who was seeing it inside Bull Bay, and we've had these strong west-southwest winds, which has pushed it more inside. Last night, we had a little change in events. Last night, that wind stopped blowing at about 8:30. And when I walked back outside, because we've had some really high tides because of that wind keeping it in, you know, pushing the water in, full moon, little higher tides, so it's been holding the water. Last night, that wind died for about 2 hours. And when I walked outside at about 10:30, I actually had a foot of mud exposed off the end of my seawall. It went to a super low tide last night. So that means it pulled a lot of fresh water out with it, which would pull it past Cape Hayes through Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, and all that area. We might have had a little bit of an event where some of it got killed and thinned out a little bit from that fresh water discharge that pushed out last night compared to the last several days. You know, it's just a thought because I haven't heard of anybody that's been out there today to get a better grasp on it, but it would not surprise me if it cleared out some of that.
So just the settling down of the winds can actually...
What allowed all that water that was being held at bay inside to flush right out, so you had that big discharge of fresh water that's been kind of stacking inside the harbor all of a sudden flushed out. And I think that just kind of like open an invisible dam. Basically, when that wind's blowing out of the west, it kind of creates a little barrier that helps
won't allow the water to go out of the pass.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is we had so much extra water built up because of the west winds that as soon as the tide went, stopped, started going out a little bit, it was just like flushing a toilet, took everything out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay, I'll go along with that.
Just a theory, you know, but it's possible.
All right. Looking it up right now, the Peace River is about 8.5 feet.
Wow, that's
so
pretty good.
So physically impossible for the red tide to come north of Cape Hayes. So if you're fishing up in the harbor, you're going to do okay. Down around Mount Lachey should be very well protected because of the flow from the Caloosahatchee. And the Peace River, Mayak River is going to keep that red tide outside of Cape Hayes. So good news for us upper harbor. How far out in the Gulf do you think it's going?
Probably about 3 miles, maybe.
All right, so what's going on out past 3 miles?
Prior to this wind, the Spanish mackerel were doing pretty well. There was a lot of bonito starting to move in closer to shore. The mangrove snapper and the lane snapper were doing real good at about that 10 to 25 mile mark. They've been getting some quality mangrove snapper out there, some up to like 5 pounds in areas. And guys are catching those on small crabs and pinfish.
Anything to do with king mackerel, blackfin tuna, anything like that?
A couple of people have gotten into some king mackerel. We had one female, one woman in last week. They're kind of regulars in the shop, but I can't remember her name because I'm terrible at that sometimes. But she got a 49-inch king 12 miles offshore.
Wow.
Yeah.
49-inch king 12 miles out?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was an impressive fish. The fish looked... A 49-inch king is impressive, but this one actually had some shoulders, and I guess the fish at the 40 to 45-pound mark, it was a chunk.
Any idea what they caught it on?
They were freelining a sardine out the back of the boat, just a frozen sardine, just freelining.
God, I love sardines as bait.
Yeah.
I can't think of a fish I haven't caught.
No, I can't either. But permit have been out there off and on. Amberjack season just opened up. So
amberjack's back?
Yes.
All right, now...
Or no, I'm sorry, Amberjack, is it this weekend, I believe, Amberjack opens.
Okay, it's going to open up. So anyway, be prepared. Coming soon to a theater near you.
It's this weekend.
Catching Amberjack, legally.
Yes. So I misspoke. I apologize for that. But AJ's open.
Darn so you, sir.
Well, I'll admit when I'm wrong. I try to.
That's okay, Robert. Okay, just carry on. You're doing great, buddy. I mean, Amberjack, what's the next fish on that list, man? Go for it.
Well, AJ's, you're going to run into them realistically, the legal size.
That's not Amberjack?
Amberjack, AJ.
Oh, okay. You're just changing it up on me.
Reef donkey.
Okay.
Whatever you want to call it.
Just trying to keep it fresh. I get it. Yeah,
go ahead. Trying to keep you on your toes, make sure you're paying attention.
Roll with it, man.
25 to 35 miles out is going to be where you're most likely to find those legal size fish. The great news about that is that you're out there just right at that borderline of that really cool blue-purple water that's holding some of the pelagics, like your dolphin, your blackfin tuna, possible sailfish, king mackerel out there most of the time year-round out there. So you've got a lot of options when you're out there. You don't have to just go for that one particular species.
And I'm going to guess that if you go out there about 35, 40 miles, you're going to see tarpon like you've never seen in your life. Couldn't prove it, but I know in other years, all of a sudden you're out there 35, 40 miles, and they're just tarpon everywhere at this time of year.
Yeah.
That's amazing sight to see. It's just school after school of tarpon rolling and feeding. Make it look like it's in Boca Raton Pass, but it's literally out there in 120, 30 feet of water. And they're just having a ball out there.
Yeah, I've heard that many times over the years, roughly this time of year, and it's usually around that full moon of the summer. So lots of different probabilities to run into.
All right, grouper. Everybody's asking about grouper. How far out?
30 to 35 miles has been the most abundant numbers. I've been hearing of a few guys getting some gags in recently in the last couple days, and it's prior to this wind, basically, it was 10 miles out, 12 miles out. But it's still been real spotty, unfortunately. Mm. The cool part, though, that I've been hearing about is some of these guys that are at 25 and 35 miles that are catching the red grouper are picking up a few scamp.
Really?
Yeah, and usually those scamp, you're usually catching those in 120-foot plus water. That's normally something you catch as a byproduct while the red snapper season was open. But some of these guys are catching them in, you know, 20 to 40 feet shallower water than normal.
All right, best bait for grouper, scamp, stuff like that?
Honestly, I'm going to go with pinfish live if I can get them, but I'm always going to take sardines, squid, and even octopus. Quite a few guys have been using the octopus lately and having incredible success with
it. It really came on. I bet you we didn't sell 5 bags of octopus for a year.
Right.
And now we're going through a case a week.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Octopus has been a real productive one. A lot of guys have also been buying the cigar minnows lately, more so than normal. It's always been a steady seller, but the cigar minnows, basically even before red snapper season opened, they were buying them pretty regularly. And I think guys are really realizing it's as good or sometimes better than the sardines, even though it is a little bit more money than the sardines.
All right. So, anyway, we've gone through some really boring things, some pretty cool things, all kinds of other things. You got Fish and Frank here. You got Robert in the chair across from me. You've got RJ trying to keep everything under control. We're never sure exactly. We watch RJ. You never know, so we're going to pay attention. Anyway, Fish and Frank here, and for me and Robert, thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you on the next one.